This is the Fix Your Sciatica Podcast. So let's talk about jiu-jitsu, physical therapy, sciatica pain, but more importantly, what happens when a physical therapist goes through sciatica pain themselves. Early on in this show, or the beginning of the show, I shared with you my pain journey, but today we're going to talk a little bit more about another physical therapist's pain journey. And one of the really cool things is that we got linked up through Instagram, but we also have a shared interest in jiu-jitsu and obviously taking care of folks. And so today I have Dr. Diana Wang, physical therapist and the founder of Open Mat Physio. Diana, it's great to see you. Thank you for being on today's episode.
Thanks for having me, Ashley. Really appreciate it.
The honor is all mine. I've been following you for a while and you've been posting some really fantastic content. Listeners, I'm going to put the Instagram handle into the show notes, but Diana is a physical therapist and BJJ practitioner, but also has had either about a sciatica or has been battling with sciatica for quite some time. And so she's been kind enough to share her experience. And I thought it would be particularly great to be able to let you know that even us as physical therapists, we're human. We've experienced these pains before and some of the thought processes that we go through when it comes to trying to manage our own pain. But before we go about the whole story, let's talk, Diana, a little bit more about yourself and your journey as a PT.
Yeah, so born and raised in Southern California in technically, I guess, the area of like Walnut, Hacienda Heights. I don't know if you know where that is, close to Pomona. That's where most people kind of have that general landmark. But born and raised in Southern California, was active most of my life. This is going to tie into a bit of my sciatica story too, or like my low back pain story. But I've had low back pain for as long as I can remember, probably since high school. It's one of those things where I can't even think about a period of my life where I didn't have back pain, but there were moments where it was worse. So besides that, I'm sure we'll talk about that later. Graduated high school, wanted to go into physical therapy. That's always been my path that I've kind of set my eyes on. I've been really lucky since I was at a young age to know that I wanted to go into PT. So I went to the University of the Pacific in Stockton, California. In Northern California, where I studied health exercise sports science and did 3 years in that program until I was exposed to the world of athletic training. And luckily, I guess a lot of these things are like luckily my school had a program. And so after a little convincing and then a couple friends saying, if you do it, I'll do it, we applied and we got into the program. It was such a fun time being able to work, you know, next to the athletes, with the athletes that were at our school. We were a D1 program, but granted, our teams were not that great, but it was cool to be able to have D1 facilities, D1 access to equipment and all that kind of stuff. So that was really fun. After I finished my athletic training degree, I still had this piece of me that wanted to go into physical therapy because rehab is such a big part of my life when I was in high school and also just was the peak of my interest of things that I wanted to do in later in life. And so I was like, you know, I still want to go into PT. And across the bridge, we also had a physical therapy school at UOP. So I applied into that program. I was very fortunate to have gotten in the first time. And then did my DPT there. It was a 2-year accelerated program, finished that, and then moved back down to Southern California to start my first job as a physical therapist in like South Orange County. So that's kind of like my journey in the beginning. And without going into too much detail, is I was working for somebody for a while, and then through certain experiences of not loving that specific setting of working in a mill, I decided to quit, try to do my own thing. And that was right before COVID happened and all the shutdowns happened. So obviously everybody in the world had to kind of pivot in a way and adjust. And that's where my vision or kind of my idea of, hey, let's start to maybe do my own thing and start to create a service or a practice that is specifically for martial artists. At that time, it was just mostly martial artists. During COVID, I worked at a different chiropractor clinic in LA for a bit. That was really transformative for my clinical practice. I learned so much, and I weigh a lot of my skills and my experience on that time period for me. But after about a year, I still had that little voice in my head telling me that I needed to go try and do my own thing. So left that job and then went full time into OpenMed Physio October 2021. So we're coming up on like 3 years, which is kind of wild. But so far, it's been the best experience I've ever had. Like, through the ups and downs, of course, it has its own difficulties and challenges. But through every single challenge, I've learned and grown and learned things about not just myself, but about the world and about people, which I've been very, very grateful for.
Wow, what a journey. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. There's a lot to unpack. I want to ask you a couple follow-up questions based off of your journey. And then we'll go a little bit more into that sciatica aspect. But I think what a lot of people see is, like, people, you have athletic trainers and you have physical therapists. And there's a lot of parallels in regards to the knowledge that both professions go through. And you're both. I only know kind of from a surface level a large difference between ATCs and PTs, and a lot of patients probably see no difference because they don't have the opportunity to work with one or the other, or they've worked with both and they seem to have kind of the same experience. So briefly, tell us a little bit more about the difference between an ATC, an athletic trainer, and a PT.
Yeah, so the way that I see it in the simplest form is that a ATC is more of a generalist. So they see everything from pre-injury to preparation to being on the field, like anticipating things that are happening, to injury, and then to some sort of acute care depending on what the injury was. And then most of the time when I was in my program, is we would do a little rehab, but most of the time if they really needed it, we would just refer them out to a PT clinic nearby or something where they would get more intensive rehab. So on the other end, you have your physical therapist who may not get the whole beginning portion of, you know, pre-injury and all that kind of stuff. Most of the patients and the clients we see are post-injury. Either they've been dealing with it for a long time or they're post-op and they've been doing some sort of rehab, and then they come to see us for the more intensive side of their recovery journey.
Very cool. I appreciate you you breaking that down to get even more clarity for the listeners right here. You brought up a really interesting thing about going through this journey and transitioning from, say, like working for someone to transitioning to creating and building up OpenMed Physio. One of the things I realized when interviewing other practitioners who have opened up their own companies, obviously, number one is from like a business and logistics standpoint, but one of the things that I found, the second biggest component is just the approach to clinical application, how they actually treat their patients and their clients. And I really appreciate that, because there's many other ways to make money, but we're all driven to be able to help people. And if we can't provide the care that we set out to do and what patients deserve under the setting of someone else's umbrella, it makes the most sense for us to take a step back and actually provide in a way that is actually both conducive for us to provide the best care for our patients. So, you know, just had to make that observation, and I appreciate that. So let's take a deep dive into your sciatic pain journey. I know that, you know, you can't recall a day or a time where you haven't had any back pain. So let's talk about it. Let's kind of present it as you're sharing your subjective history with PTR. You're reviewing it with yourself, so then that way you can get so we can all get a better idea of what has been going on.
Yeah, I think if I try really, really hard to remember back to like the first time I experienced it, I think it was because when I was in high school, I played basketball. So like I mentioned in the very beginning, I've been a pretty active person my entire life. I played basketball for most of my years in high school. And there was one incident where I remember driving to the basket and this girl shoved me where I hyperextended my back. And I just remember that was one of the first moments where I felt it. And another specific moment where I remember feeling it was I was squatting with some friends. And then for some reason, it wasn't a super heavy weight, but I was maybe not paying attention or something, went down into the squat. As I came up, I felt this super sharp pain in my low back. And then that turned into like the sciatica issue where I wasn't able to get off like the ground or get up from the ground for like 2 days. And I remember it being super painful. And that was kind of like my start of dealing with low back pain. And I think as I got older, it was more of some of that nocebo stuff that we hear in the industry, which is very unfortunate, of don't do this, don't do that. And I remember in PT school, even in PT school, I got some nocebo. Like I had a professor that would tell me that I didn't have enough extension or mobility in my low back, and that's the reason why I have issues. And as much as maybe that is true in some way, shape, or form, like it really shaped my way of seeing my body. I'm like, oh, so I'm limited in a lot of ways, which kind of sucked. But from, let's say, as I got more and more into adulthood, I would notice episodes of more achiness. I would wake up and my back would just hurt. I would have like left hip pain. So my left hip is more of the problem child for me. And that's where some of my sciatica really flares up when I do have issues. What it really feels like is more of just pain in the glute and then some numbness down the leg with low back pain as well. So the most recent episode that you saw on social media was when I went to Asia with my family. And I think during that time, we were so busy walking around like so much. I mean, in my day to day, I'm not like walking 20,000 steps. So going to jujitsu, going to the gym, but I'm not walking 20,000 steps. And so when we went to Asia, we were walking 20,000 steps every day for almost 15 days or something. So it really flared up my back. I just wasn't prepared for that capacity. And when I came back, it just lingered around for a really long time and I wasn't able to get rid of it. And doing any jujitsu that required me to flex or even extend, both directions were really irritable. I wasn't able to train. So that kind of sucked. And so it led me down this path of, okay, how do I address this most recent episode? But if I backtrack a little bit to when I really started addressing my own sciatica was during COVID. So I had a bit of a flare up. I don't think it was from jiu-jitsu or anything. It was just like really random. And that's what I've learned. And I'm sure you can also attest is that sometimes back pain and sciatica is super random. There's no specific cause. There's no like, this is exactly why you're dealing with this. Sometimes it's stress induced. Sometimes it's exercise induced. Sometimes it's lifestyle induced. And we can't put a finger on it. All we can do is look at everything, try to figure out the best way to approach it, and then like try to tackle it from different angles, right? So at that time, I got sick and tired of having such extreme back pain on a regular basis that I told myself I'm going to finally take care of it. So started making myself a rehab routine where I was working on a lot of just building my base of strength and starting to deadlift, squat, lunge, jump, and like be athletic in a way. And over time, even though it was like really painful at first, because deadlifting was probably the worst thing that I could do. I always was so fearful of deadlifting, I think from narratives that people have told me to in the past. But as I started deadlifting more and more, the pain started going away. Like if anything, I would feel very little, but I was able to increase weight, which was really, really cool. And that was something that was very empowering for me. And since then, my pain has been pretty good, except for those specific episodes. And I think as long as I maintain a certain level of fitness, I'm at the gym 2 to 3 times a week lifting, I'm focusing on, I've been running as well. So running has helped because, you know, I don't know, maybe like the single leg strength work, doing some speed workouts and stuff, that's been helping build some more just capacity that's more well-rounded. And then also focusing on my recovery, that's been really big, has made a really big difference in my quality of my back. And I've noticed since that whole incident in January, February, my back's been feeling pretty good. it doesn't really bother me that much on a regular basis, unless I'm obviously sitting for like too long. I get up, walk around a bit, and then it'll go away. So that's kind of my current state of my sciatic issue.
This episode is brought to you by the Patient Advocate Program. Are you tired of not having support between your rehab sessions? Introducing the Patient Advocate Program, and we're focused on your recovery, and we're offering you 24/7 access to a doctorate of physical therapy. Stop waiting in line to be seen and stop spending hours doing long exercise programs. Imagine being able to get all of your care delivered straight to your phone. Best of all, it's affordable. We believe everyone deserves top-notch relief without breaking the bank. So why wait? Take control of your health today and visit ptpatientadvocate.com and book your free call with our experts.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing. I mean, what a story. I mean, it's like, we'll probably say like more than a couple of years, right? Ever since you were a high school kid,
yeah. Right?
And you've been through this, and what an interesting evolution. We're gonna unpack that a little bit more, but I'm so intrigued because I mean, you've always wanted to be in like the rehab space. You've had your journey as an ATC and also transitioning to a DBT. One of the first questions that came to my mind was, what was the rehab experience like when you initially got hurt, or if you actually ended up going through some sort of rehab when you were younger?
You know, I never actually went to PT.
Okay.
It's so interesting. If anything, I remember the only rehab I ever got, because my parents are super Asian, so we would go to an acupuncturist.
Okay.
Or yeah. So one of my biggest influences of me doing athletic training and physical therapy was the athletic trainer at my high school. So he's always been like, I always seen him as like a big part of my life, like a big brother almost in a way. And he was a big influence in me wanting to pursue this. And he was a really great athletic trainer, took care of us really well. And was the one that kind of, you know, planted the seed. And then my actual rehab that I got was mostly like a family friend who was an acupuncturist that would help me. But other than that, I've never actually gone through PT, like traditional PT myself.
Like as an actual patient. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, so you had your actual athletic trainer as a high school student. Was he like helpful in your, or just trying to manage it, or was it mostly like, yeah, tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I think he was trying his best, but it wasn't like, I think at that time also the evidence in strength training, the evidence in building a foundation wasn't as strong, maybe for some populations, but for the general population, it seems like it's been more so in the maybe last like 5-6 years where I really have heard people, oh, you really need to be a lot more active, build some strength, lift some weights, especially in jiu-jitsu, you know? And I think in general, he was helpful. He was trying his best. And with the acupuncturist, I think he was also trying his best as well, but it all just felt like temporary relief. It would just go away because then they would just do some cupping, some needling, and then just go away for a bit. And it'll come back, and it'll go away, and it'll come back. And it's like, it almost just got to a point where I expected it. And I was like, oh yeah, my back's probably going to hurt. And I hated that feeling because it limited me so much on the things that I was doing.
And throughout all this, you brought up the concept of nocebo. Can you tell the audience a little bit more about what that truly means? Like maybe the listeners who are just general population, people who have been dealing with sciatica pain or chronic pain for a long period of time, they probably have come across it, but with you presenting it in a way, I find it to be extremely positive. And I know my definitions, but I would love for you to share, you know, what your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I guess my definition of a nocebo is some sort of statement or some sort of phrase that people say that maybe is a narrative that they've heard from another clinician or the internet or something that actually invokes fear in the person that they're talking to. So for example, something like looking at an image or talking to a doctor and they're saying, oh my gosh, you have a back of an 80-year-old. I'm like, that is literally the worst thing you can say to somebody because now they're like, oh no, I'm fragile. I can't do stuff. And now I'm just going to limit myself as well. So I think when my instructor, I don't think she meant to cause harm, but when she said, oh, you barely have mobility in your back, I'm like, what? And then that just caused myself to go into this thought process of, oh no, because I have no mobility, then I shouldn't do this, I shouldn't do that. Whereas we shouldn't be planting those types of thoughts into people's heads.
100%. Another clinician I find to be a big inspiration, a mentor of mine, is Dr. Ersin Religioso. That name sounds familiar. He talks a lot about like pain and nocebos. He also describes them as thought viruses as well. And one of the most important things, listeners, is that how we describe things, and this is on the whole psychology aspect, and words matter. How you describe things actually have a huge impact in regards to how you feel and how your body reacts to things. And so when you are in fear, everything is going to hurt and everything is going to be scary, and it's going to stop you from doing the things that you love. And so I'm really glad that you brought that up, because I know that for when I'm working with the patients that I come across, they're coming in and being like, I'm so afraid, or the doctor says I have destroyed this, and they're like, I'm surprised you're walking. And usually what I'll say I'll say, listen, how old are you? You're like 40, 50 years old. Like, the reality is that every decade in life, we're going to have some sort of abnormality via an MRI. And this is actually my case, and I don't know if you agree with me, but I'm going to make a case that I actually think we should get MRIs every single year. So then that way, at least we can actually address these orthopedic changes, right? And so because of the fact is, like, if you've been dealing with sciatica pain for like 10 years, or you're not dealing with any sort of pain right now, and the next day you have sciatica pain, you get an MRI and they're like, okay, you have a disc irritation or disc herniation. That disc could have been herniated years ago.
Totally.
And you could not have pain regardless, right? So, you know, there are a lot of things that come to mind. So I'm so glad you brought that up. And it is interesting, especially as a PT, to, you know, you're learning about this, but all of a sudden learning about this creates enough fear in you to make it even more challenging. And yeah, so
I think as physical therapists, sometimes we have to be mindful of helping our clients and our patients find perspective, because when people are in pain, a lot of times they're in a bit of a tunnel vision and they want to find the answer. They want to know exactly what's happening. But as a PT, we have to bring all of that information also with a heightened nervous system of the other person and be able to create a space where it's safe enough for them to be able to express how they feel, but at the same time, gently give them the evidence of what is really going on. Because the evidence says otherwise in a lot of ways that our patients can present things. And we just have to say, well, I hear you and I know that that's something that you feel. And sometimes I just don't even go into the explanation of that. I just have it in the back of my mind almost as a sign. And I'm like, okay, well, they're going to believe that.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.
All medications require eligibility and prescription. First month as low as $25 with a 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
Yes, I'm going to create a program, some sort of structure or some sort of exercise, set. And I'm going to prove to them that inadvertently, from the side, I guess, that show them that their thought process or the belief is actually not true. And then over time, they start to believe something else because I put this in place without even having to explain it to them. But I think, like you said, words really matter. And especially as people who are doing their own thing, trying to create a reputation and trust, like I'm sure you, like our entire industry and being a healthcare provider weighs on trust. And if you can build trust with your clients and your patients, then you're doing a pretty good job of being able to create a sustaining business or sustaining practice. When you first start going into your own business, it's easy to look at the things, like you said, it's easy to make money. Like, you can nocebo every single person you see, and then they're going to stick around for a long time. Or you can take the opposite direction where it's, hey, look, these are the things that you may have believed before, and these are the things that are actually evidence-based. And I want you just to look at both, and I want you to know that they can exist at the same time. You can believe that, but this is also can exist too. So what we're going to do is take these two things and we're going to create a program where it makes the most sense for you. And we're going to focus on your goals. And as jujitsu people, getting back onto the mats is their biggest goal. It's like, okay, maybe these thoughts, let's just push them to the side while we're working towards your goal. And over time, I've seen people who have thought a certain way, 3 months later, 6 months later, depending on what they're dealing with, they'll say, oh man, I've learned so much about this process. And the biggest thing I learned is that everything that I believed before, that was all from either Google or from doctors that, you know, may have had good intentions, but didn't know better advice, have told me. And that is, in my opinion, the biggest win outside of them being able to get back to training, you know?
100%. Being able to, as you said, create a safe space for these folks to actually like make these changes and like take a step into areas that are unknown, right? To be able to, in fact, challenge those beliefs. So, you know, let's talk a little bit more about that, like that strength and conditioning program that you got yourself into, because you've been dealing with this for a number of years. And you said at there was a point in time, there was a, we'll call it like a breaking point where you're like, I just got to start moving, right? I got to start moving, got to start exploring it. Maybe the large portion of the pain that you were feeling was really more of a protective mechanism because of the fear that was instilled upon you, most likely during physical therapy school, like maybe a little bit in high school, but like definitely it's like, oh, well, you're limited in extension. Well, what does that mean? What is that going to do for me? Right. And so as you were sharing that, a couple of thoughts came to my head and I was trying to figure out, okay, well, why or how was this so successful for you? Mm-hmm. Right. So we talked about, you talked about capacity, the ability to, for people to just handle a certain amount of stresses or how big is that bucket that you have. But then also recovery, right? Being able to do the necessary things to allow yourself to, recover from the stresses that you encounter, whether it be from exercise, life, and in general. I forgot the third piece that I missed, but I think the biggest thing was like, oh, and then the second, obviously it's overcoming that fear. And one of the things I always found to be very interesting is that whenever I encounter, you probably seen this, whenever someone is experiencing pain or some sort of injury for more than 3 months, like they're in the chronic stage right now, right? They're in the chronic stage. And I often say, listen, it's been 12 weeks, whatever is actually injured has already been healed. We've gone through the inflammatory processes. The tissues have been healed already, or it might not have, but now we just got to figure out how we can create a safe environment for these folks to start moving. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think most of the time what people are really trying to hear is that things will be okay. Because a lot of times you see so much catastrophizing on the internet of like, oh my gosh, if you move and bend, your discs are going to fly out of your back and you're going to explode. And I'm like, first of all, that is impossible without getting hit by a car, which we don't want to think about. But it's nearly impossible for your discs to just fly out of your back. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, people just want to know that, oh, okay. It's like the whole concept of like when you show up to a scene and someone's like hurt, and then you're like, oh my gosh, like they're gonna be like, oh my gosh, right? But if you show up and you're like, okay, I'm scouring the scene, everything's good, okay, cool, they're safe, but we need to address this, and you go in like a calm demeanor and you say, hey, look, this is what happened, we just have to take you to the hospital and do all these things, you're gonna be fine, a lot of times they're gonna be like, oh, okay, I'm gonna be fine. And that's like how I see working with patients who are very neurotic when it comes to their chronic pain.
I also find it to be really helpful when whenever someone who is very sensitive to their pain and also have that fearful aspect, or it's like, oh my gosh, I had a huge flare up yesterday, I don't know what to do. I often like to share with them, and I find this to be particularly effective, is actually trying to approach your pain from a position of curiosity. Every flare up, everything that we do is another data point to give us a little bit of a better idea. I love eating food. I've seen your stuff on Instagram. I know that you love food and pizza. So, you know, consider this as like every piece, every flare up or every stiffness that you feel, it's going to be more of like a breadcrumb or pizza crumb. That gets us a little bit closer to trying to figure out the problem. And so when we look at it from a position of curiosity, we have a lot more control over how we can do things or how we can react to it, as compared to, oh my gosh, the sky is falling. Because when the sky is falling, everything, nothing's going to work. And so being able to provide that safe space is key. And so I love the fact that you got back into squats, lunges, deadlifts. A lot of times if you go on Reddit, they're like, can I do deadlifts? And everyone's like, never do deadlifting. So, and oftentimes I find it's not necessarily like the what, that, I mean, yes, definitely what you do is important, but I think what's also extremely important, and I don't think just as a profession, as physical therapist, like it doesn't, there's not as much of an opportunity to look at how things are being done. And so kind of walk us through as, especially for the deadlifts, right? You're like, okay, well, PT school said that deadlifts were bad, but then there's like a growing number of evidence that actually deadlifts are particularly good. What is that? What's that bridge that's going to help you get over that hump? What was that thought process? What were you trying to do? What were some of the cues that you found to be particularly helpful to help you overcome that hump?
I think what really started kind of my journey was having good mentors and people around me that really encouraged me and brought the evidence in front of my face and said, look, like this is actually what the science says. And what we have to do is just find a safe entry point. And this is kind of how I approach all of our clients is everybody that comes to us is just looking for a safe entry point on this, you know, spectrum of rehab and lifting and or like strength and conditioning, athletic performance, right? So I had to treat myself that way. I knew exactly what certain limitations I had in terms of joint mobility and all that kind of stuff. But I think what it really came down to, my biggest hurdle was the mental side. It was the confidence piece of, am I actually going to be able to do this? Like, should I be doing this? Right. So, with the help of my mentors, I was able to start to create at least a program where there were variations of these buckets that we talk about, or these movement patterns that we're talking about that may not look exactly like what you would see on YouTube or what you would traditionally think as a hinge or a squat or something. There's many different ways that you can progress, regress, change an exercise where you know that what you are actually trying to achieve is still there. It just might look a little bit different. So what we did with the help of my mentors again is they helped me create that starting point of, okay, if you can't do this right now because you're scared or it's painful or you're just limited, then we'll do this. Okay, that's not painful. Okay, this we're still kind of achieving something similar, maybe not at the highest level of just like a regular deadlift, but we're kind of going to build our way up. And if you can start to create little markers of safety, of your body starts to learn, oh, okay, I can do that. I can do that. I can do that. And so that's what I did. I took all of the movement patterns that we generally see in strength conditioning, and I just broke them down into pieces and variations where I felt like, okay, is this a red flag? Is this a green flag? Is this a yellow flag? Where does it kind of sit? Okay, if it's a green, then I'll keep it in. If it's a red, then I'll change it into something else that where I understand what I'm trying to get. And then from there, I had a starting program, and little by little, with adjusting tempo, ranges of motion, reps, weight, and stuff like that, I was able to finally get to the point where I think my highest deadlift, which I haven't deadlifted in so long, mostly because I prefer single leg RDLs, just like heavy single leg RDLs over like a traditional deadlift. I haven't deadlifted in a long time, but I think my highest deadlift was like 210 or something. And that was like where I knew, I was like, oh yeah, like I feel really strong at this point. And it took a long time. It took probably 6 to 8 months for me to really build up to that point. And then when I got there, that's when I felt comfortable with being able to adjust my own program, being able to know how to dose certain things to make sure that the body is responding well.
I love that. And I love that you use the like the red flag, green flag, yellow flag analogy, because what you did a very good job of doing was being clear in regards to what you wanted to get accomplished. But also, I think where a lot of people, when it comes to approaching exercise and or even a rehab program, is just overlooking how things make them feel. You probably have seen this, like people go to you and they're like, yeah, I went to this I went through this program and I don't know if it's helpful. And it's like, okay, well, tell me more about it. Well, they gave me all these 15 different exercises. And what was interesting is that during that time, during that person's experience, they were probably given 15 different exercises, but they were never actually reflecting on, is this making me feel better? Is this making me feel worse? Is this not impacting me? Or can I do this without pain? And listeners, this is a very important piece, is that like when you're working with someone like Diana or myself or anyone, you have to let them know how it's making you feel, because pain is an invisible thing. We can try our hardest to objectify it through our scale of 0 to 10, but we can also kind of rate it on like the Oswestry low back index, right? Like we have those opportunities to be able to say like, how can this like objectify? But ultimately the pain that we're dealing with, it's an experience, it's invisible, and we cannot read minds. I wish we could, that'd be amazing. That'd make our lives a lot easier. But if we don't know what you're dealing with, then it's either like, one, people like Diana, myself, are going to keep nagging you. How does this feel? How does this feel? How does this feel? Obviously to a point where we don't just like get you to a point where you're like super sensitive to everything, but we need to know what is going on in order to actually say, okay, let's progress, regress, or change a different angle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's one of those things where that's why communication is such a big pillar in our practice. And our entire practice is virtual, so we do everything online. We don't do any in-person work. So it is especially important to have the communication piece, because I need to know. I try to set expectations early on with our clients too, of like, hey, the more you communicate with me, the faster we'll be able to make changes, especially in the very beginning. We have to see how your body feels within 24, 48 hours. And if you give me that information, then I'll know how to make sure that we're scaling it properly. And the more information you give me, the better I'll have in terms of a database of how your body responds to certain things. And if something is off, let's say you do have a day where you're not feeling great, we can look back and lean back on everything that you've done where you have felt okay, and maybe just take this as an anomaly. And then usually the next day they're fine. So it's almost goes back to what we were talking about of being able to be open about this kind of stuff and saying, okay, let's be curious about why maybe today you feel a little bit worse. Oh, I lifted a couch over the weekend and helping my friend move, and my shoulder feels a little sore, or my back feels a little sore. Okay, that makes sense. You know, maybe just back off on a couple of things today, and then tomorrow we'll reevaluate. And a lot of times I wake up, oh yeah, I actually feel pretty good. So it wasn't something that was red flaggy that needed to be like, you know, oh my God, addressed immediately. It's just be curious about it. Make sure you take everything into consideration and then move forward in the way that you feel like is appropriate.
In regards to curiosity, I mean, approaching new skills, it's always really hard, especially as an adult. I practice jujitsu, you practice jujitsu as well. We all started and it's like pretty terrible. But what's interesting is that we're physical therapists and we have the opportunity to take care of ourselves and our training partners. And so when it comes to being a BJJ practitioner and a physical therapist, let's talk about some of the strategies or things. Like we're going to take a deep dive and just kind of like take in sciatica and apply it to jujitsu, sciatica and low back pain. Like, what are some things to consider or that you look for when you're working with BJJ athletes and they're like, you know, Diana, my back is killing me. What are some of the things that you look for? How do you approach a problem like this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. So I think, one of the biggest things that is a priority for me that we have to get before the end of our call or anything that we're doing is how much volume they have in jiu-jitsu or lifting, or what are they doing in terms of volume wise? And then also what are they doing intensity wise? Are they trying to pojada, go to war every single day? Or are they taking days where they're just kind of having high low days? Or what are they doing? You know, so I need to get a base of like what that looks like, because the majority of the time working with jiu-jitsu athletes, people who really, really love training, which is almost everybody that we work with, they'll train until their body falls apart. And unless there's someone saying, hey, we gotta be a little smarter about this, we gotta make sure that we pull back at times and change your volume and intensity at times, they're not really gonna do it. So that has to be the first piece of a conversation that we have with them. And if you're able to tweak things properly with decreasing volume, maybe in the beginning for a bit, slowly add it back in towards the end, a lot of times you've prepared them well enough in between. And then when they go back, it's seamless. The other thing I usually look for is if they have a background in some sort of lifting or if they've never lifted weights before, because that makes a really big difference. And a lot of jiu-jitsu athletes like hate lifting weights. They're like, oh, it's the bane of my existence. And I understand, because sometimes lifting is really boring. But if I put into perspective, like, we're going to have to do some work for in terms of building up your foundation. But once you get to a point where you feel comfortable, you only have to go to the gym twice a week. It could be like 45 minutes at a time. It doesn't have to be anything crazy. And then they think, oh, okay, well, that's more digestible, rather than people saying you got to hit the gym 5 or 6 times a week, chest, arms, you know, like all these, like, what's it called? Different types of programs. But in order for us to get the most out of lifting, we have to make sure that it's efficient and also make sure we keep the main thing, which is jiu-jitsu. And I always try to be like, if you hate lifting, just think about it as you're lifting so you can be healthy on the mats. And a lot of times they're like, oh, okay, that makes a lot of sense. I'll do that. So those are typically the things I look for on like a broader scale with jiu-jitsu athletes before we dive into like the actual assessment of looking at their body.
Yeah, that makes total sense. It's kind of like a load and stress management. And, you know, what's really interesting is the fact that there's been a lot of talk and research about young kids. It's like, whether it be basketball, like whatever sport, like parents see their 7-year-old excelling in soccer and they're like, well, I got to get my kid into like more soccer camps and everything. But both you and I know, and also like a large part of the medical community knows, well, number one, they're 7 years old. So like there's a whole bunch of development that needs to happen. But one of the best things that you can do to keep your child healthy, especially when they're a young athlete, is to actually vary their sports. And it's just so interesting because we do that for our children, but we forget that as we become adults. It's like, well, we want our kids to be like multi-sport athletes, but yet if jiu-jitsu is what we love and that's what we're always going to do, the rule applies for everyone. It allows us to recover from all the stretches, especially from the training that we go through, because it's pretty intense. I train 3 days a week. I usually go Wednesdays, Saturdays, and Sundays. And usually, because they're spaced out, I get an opportunity to train hard, which means the other rest of the week, I'm lifting. But it's interesting, because I lift Monday through Friday at 6 a.m. every morning. And people are like, oh man, you're so dedicated. It must be so hard. And I jokingly say, but it's true. I say, I go in every day, but like on a scale of like 0 to 10 intensity, I'm giving it like a 5 Monday through Friday. And like, that's what's going to allow me to stick through this. And I realized going like with adding this, I definitely feel a lot better. Definitely feel a lot better. I think it's stronger, and like my joints feel better too. And so, I transitioned from college swimming to CrossFit to jiu-jitsu, and early in my career, jiu-jitsu career, you know, we're all early in our career. But a large part of it, I was like, I just want to do jiu-jitsu, and I didn't hit the weights. And I was like, why does my body feel so beaten up? And it's like, okay, cool. I'm still training 3 days a week, but I need a little something. I need a little cross training to change it. So I'm glad that you brought it up. And yeah, everything. And especially as when we're adults and we're busy, we don't have time to do stuff that, for lack of a better word, sucks, right? But it does make sense for us to do things as long as we know that there's some sort of end goal or some sort of journey that we're working towards. So I'm glad that you brought that up, Diana.
Yeah, cross training is so big. And I think in general, if we look at strength training and even athletic development, that kind of, like, jiu-jitsu athletes are athletes. So I'm a believer in trying to build an athlete rather than just building someone into a bodybuilder. And just knowing that, you know, at the end of the day, this is going to be your foundation. So when you get into any tricky situations in jiu-jitsu, your body has to have that foundation to lean on. And if you're able to do that, then like you mentioned, is you feel a lot better. You can go train multiple times a week consistently and not feel so beat up. And a big part of that is because you have the intention of focusing on your foundation.
100%. And yeah, awesome. We could talk all day about this, and I'm so thankful that you were down to share some of your time with us and share your injury journey. I know for myself, like us physical therapists, like we're not really the greatest patients, right? Like we go into it, we get hurt, we think, oh, well, we know everything. Well, maybe we are the exception when it comes to getting hurt. And the reality is the fact that, again, words matter. but also for the most part, when you have crossed that 12-week barrier, the things that are healed most likely have been healed. Let's create a safe space for us to move either with less pain or without pain, be in tune with how you feel and really manage yourself. And Diana, thank you so much for being a guest on this episode. It was awesome. And I hope that we stay in touch and that we can continue to record some episodes in the future. You help BJJ athletes. For the listeners who are like, yeah, I think I want to work with Diana. I want to get in touch with Open Mat Physio. What are the best ways?
You can find us on Instagram, Open Mat Physio, website, Open Mat Physio, basically everywhere Open Mat Physio, you can find us. So, but yeah, no, I really appreciate you having me on today. It's always fun to be able to have conversations about jiu-jitsu, about injuries, about the most updated evidence in terms of rehab and recovery. And I'd love to do more episodes if you're willing to have me.
100%. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you got some help from today's podcast. And for more info, check us out at ifixyoursciatica.com. Have a fantastic and pain-free day.
No patient-therapist relationship is formed by listening to this podcast. We are not providing medical advice, and all information should be confirmed by a medical provider.